This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 25th at 11:09 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear this, but if they have, I'll have to refer you to the Mueller report to find out what they are. Changes in political news are beyond our purview. Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics. I'm Mike Thompson. Steve Brown is off again this week. We've had some questions, so let me explain. The term Snollygoster means shrewd politician, and that's what we do here. We look at the shrewd political moves happening around the Buckeye State, and unlike the former special counsel, Robert Mueller, we give you more than one-word answers to questions. Coming up on the podcast, a new poll of Ohio voters has good news for Joe Biden. But first, two nuclear power plants are safe. The Ohio legislature approved the so-called energy bill this week. Governor DeWine quickly signed it into law. Most believe the primary purpose of this law is to bail out two aging First Energy nuke plants along Lake Erie. Without subsidies, the company threatened to shut down the plants, putting thousands of people out of work. The bill also subsidizes two coal power plants, including one in Indiana. One of the lead champions of the bill, House Speaker Larry Householder, disputes that term bailout.
No more than, you know, we bail in solar, we bail in wind, we bail in all sorts of energy, and that's something that's happened since the beginning of time.
All right, a bail-in. Electric ratepayers from around the state will pay for this bail-in through surcharges on their electric bills. But bills won't go up. They may actually go down a little because lawmakers largely scrapped renewable energy mandates and their associated surcharges. The mandates have been in place for about a decade, and State Rep. Casey Weinstein says the rules fueled Ohio's renewable energy industry, which has created 112,000 jobs.
Ohio will have the dubious honor of being one of the only states in the nation to reduce or weaken an energy standard, a renewable portfolio standard.
Joining us to discuss this new law, how it came to be, and what it means going forward is our resident energy legislation expert, Andy Chow. What a title there, Andy.
Right.
When he's not covering energy, he's covering other things as a State House reporter for Ohio Public Radio. Andy, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's start at the beginning, because this has been a long process. I mean, those of us who have watched these TV ads are having a hard time figuring out what all happened and how it came to be. The bill was called the Clean Energy Bill. It was going to offer subsidies to nuke plants and renewable energy sources, but that's not the bill signed into law this week. Just how different is this bill from where lawmakers started?
It's very, very different. And I would do you one better. I'll go back even 2 years ago when we weren't talking about changing renewables and we weren't talking about changing efficiency programs, and the only conversation was, should there be subsidies for nuclear plants? That is an idea that just never really got off the ground because nobody, especially the Republican lawmakers, wanted to just solely pass something that would increase subsidies without doing some sort of rate reduction offset. So that's how the whole issue with green energy, so we're talking about two things, renewable energy standards and then efficiency energy standards. That's how those two elements came into play as well, because also remember that for years now, a lot of conservative lawmakers have wanted to do away with those standards. So that's how this whole game started to play in April, where Speaker Larry Householder put out this plan. Like you said, it was the Ohio Clean Air Act, and it would have just kind of changed the whole game. And instead of having these mandates, it would have created subsidies for all energy sources that produced clean energy, so zero carbon-emitting energy. But that's just something that a lot of lawmakers, especially conservative lawmakers, could not get on board for. So I really see that the evolution of this bill happened when the speaker couldn't get enough Democratic lawmakers to go with a bill that would scrap the mandates. And so in order to get this bill through, he had to get rid of the mandates to bring on some more of the conservative lawmakers.
But there are some Democrats, especially Democrats in northern Ohio, where these jobs were at risk, the First Energy nuke plants were at risk. They signed on to this as well.
They did. When it passed the House the first time, the Speaker needed Democrats to get involved, and he was able to get 10 of them. And this time around, I believe he got 9 of them. So the Democrats played a big role in helping this bill get passed, especially in the House. Not so much in the Senate, but the Senate has a much larger majority of Republicans.
All right. So it's law now. What does it mean for the two nuclear plants?
Well, the First Energy Solutions, which owns both of the nuclear plants, one in Oak Harbor, known as Davis Bessie, and the other is the Perry plant in Perry. And First Energy Solutions says they are going to reverse course. They're no longer on that track of shutting down the plants. They're going to keep the plants open, and they're going to, you know, they're going to refuel Davis Bessie starting next year. So from what we can tell, this is the subsidy plan that First Energy Solutions was looking for.
Does it have an expiration date? They just continue to subsidize these plants in perpetuity? Or is there a sunset date where, you know what, these plants simply are, they're aging, they're obsolete, that we have to shut them down?
There is a sunset provision in the law. It should end by 2027. There's, you know, people are still sort of arguing, well, how long does that mean? How many years are these plants actually getting subsidies? Is it 6? Is it 7 years? Because of an argument of when the program actually goes into place. But what we do know is that it's supposed to sunset by 2027. If you talk to First Energy Solutions, if you talk to the people who are pro-nuclear, they'll say that'll give the plants plenty of time to get through what they see as like just choppy waves of the energy market where they're struggling because of lower prices on natural gas, where they think that the market will sort of stabilize itself after that and that these nuclear plants can continue to make money after the subsidies for maybe 15 or 20 years. Now, opponents say that's not the case, and a lot of people say, well, we have no idea because First Energy Solutions never opened up their books to the public, never opened up their books to the legislators to really pinpoint exactly what their financial woes are.
And this bill, this law, does not require them to do so, even though they're getting $130 million a year?
They'll get $150 million a year. So there is this panel, this authority that will look over First Energy Solutions application. And in the law, there is a provision that says that whatever that panel requests as far as information goes, First Energy Solutions has to give that information over, but it will still be confidential. So there's still a question of who will actually get to see that. Is that going to be open to the public? Is that only open to the Ohio Clean Air Development Authority? We don't know.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on to the coal plants. What does it mean for these two coal plants?
So for a lot of energy customers, we have already been paying some type of subsidy into what's known as OVEC, the Ohio Valley Electric Corporation. It's a coalition of three of the big utilities, AEP, Duke Energy, Dayton Power and Light. They own two coal plants. One is the Kiger Creek plant in Gallia County, and then the other is the Clifty Creek plant in Madison, Indiana. They've been running these plants since the 50s. They are just older plants. They just don't produce as much as other newer plants do. They're just, you know, they emit a certain amount of carbon into the air, and they don't do well in the marketplace. So we have been paying subsidies up to this point already for OVEC. This bill sort of just sets it into law that every ratepayer, not just those three utilities that I mentioned, but also First Energy customers, they'll all be paying a subsidy of up to $1.50 every month to go into these coal plants until 2030.
So actually the subsidy for the coal plants is more than the nuke plants. So the,
nuke
plant's like 80 cents a month, right, on average?
Exactly. Well, to be fair, it's capped at $1.50. A lot of people believe that all the utilities will go along with just that top rate. But it's yet to be seen because every utility will set their own rate in their next rate plan that goes in front of the PUCO.
All right. Now, the coal plants, are they in? I mean, this is so ironic because this was the clean energy bill. All the first ads showed all these windmills and solar panels and toxic emissions. It was going to do away with all it. And here we have two old, inefficient coal plants that are now being subsidized by this clean energy bill. Were they just thrown in to get the to satisfy the folks from coal country to, and the supporters of coal energy that, all right, we're bailing out the nuke plants, so let's bail out some coal plants as well?
Well, I think it was to get a couple more votes on the other side of the aisle. If you remember us talking about that bill that's been in the works for a couple years now to just subsidize nuclear, there's also been a bill in the works for a couple years now to subsidize OVEC. So I think what Larry Householder saw was just, why don't we just kind of bunch in these different things together? I was kind of describing it as almost like a Frankenstein's monster of a bill, where it's just kind of grabbing a piece of legislation that we've seen over here, another bill over here, sort of piecing something together that can sort of be cobbled along the lines of getting support.
Andy, can I ask you a dumb question?
Sure.
Shouldn't Indiana be bailing out its own plants?
Well, you know, Representative Bill Seitz, who's been a long opponent of green energy standards and a big proponent of these types of laws that help the coal plants, he said, as he pointed out, these are still plants that are owned by Ohio's utility companies. So the money will actually go to them. It'll go to AEP, DP&L, and Duke Energy, and then it'll just sort of offset the rates of what they're paying into the coal plant. But yes, you're right. There's a lot of people who say, why can't Indiana pay for their own coal plant?
just asking. You know, the energy markets are very complicated. You do a great job of breaking it down. And subsidies, as Larry Householder mentioned in the soundbite that we played, subsidies are a part of this to keep energy cheap and overcome the peaks and valleys and things like that. And other states do subsidize, other Democratic states subsidize nuclear power.
Yeah, and so what we have here is just, and there are a lot of Democrats who said, had this only been a bill to subsidize nuclear, they would have been all for it. But right now, the big victim of all of this policy change is the state's green energy standard. So the way that it supported renewable energy, the way it supported the growth of solar and wind development, the way it supported these innovative companies that look for ways to save energy in the first place, to become more energy efficient. And so in the end, we're seeing less incentives, less subsidies going to these more surging, rising energy sources and renewable and efficiency, and instead going to things that are sort of known as sort of the old way of doing things, which, of course, is coal, which emits carbon, and then nuclear, which a lot of people think that maybe we should move away from. Now, and I will note, there's a lot of environmentalists who say that nuclear should be a big role in creating, in reducing our carbon footprint.
Yeah, because they produce, you know, waste that lasts for eons, but they don't produce carbon emissions.
Right.
So does this mean that Ohio's renewable energy industry will just dry up? There is federal help. Other states do okay without mandates and standards. What's the predictions for the future of Ohio's renewables?
Well, you have a lot of other challenges that solar and wind energy face. Wind is still dealing with what's known as the setback issue, where they can plant their wind turbines. Yeah. Right now, Ohio has pretty strict laws on where you can place it. So wind is already dealing with that. Solar has been dealing with this so-called need issue, where they try to get these solar farms approved by state regulators, but they need to show that there is a need for these solar farms. There's all sorts of policies that kind of stand against renewable energy. I think the advanced energy market, the advanced energy industry, sees this as just another blow to what has been a growing industry here in Ohio.
So if they're going to have to pick states, Ohio may lose out because it's just more difficult to do business here.
Right.
All right. Andy, before we let you go, we've got to talk about the state fair. You were at this is the day of the year that I think the state house reporters may enjoy it as much as the governor does. The governor goes to the state fair and he cut the ribbon, they open the state fair, and then he tours them. And tagging along are all these state house reporters who get to, I'm sure, sample the corn dogs and things like that. This was Mike DeWine's first trip through the state fair as governor. He seemed like he was having a really good time.
Mike DeWine was definitely in his element here at the Ohio State Fair. I mean, this is he grew up in Greene County, driving to the Ohio State Fair every year. He's been a public official for decades when he walks around Midway, everybody knows who he is. They'll come up and say, "Hey, I met you in Lima," or "Hey, I met you in Springfield." They all have a story to tell about Mike DeWine. It was definitely something where he was in his element. He raised sheep with his children when they were younger. So when he walked through the sheep barn, he was talking to all the sheep farmers about washing the sheep, raising the sheep. So this was definitely a lot of fun for the governor.
Now, he's going to renew the tradition of staying one night at the state fair. He and his wife are both going to stay at the fair. Are they going to stay in the sheep barn?
They're not going to. No, and actually the governor was talking about how his favorite thing as a boy would be to visit the Ohio Department of Natural Resources exhibit. And so that's actually where they're going to stay this year, is in the ODNR side of the park.
That does not provide fodder for the late night comics. That does, ODNR building does not have the same ring as the governor staying in the sheep barn.
It is close to that Smokey the Bear statue, though, so maybe there's something there.
It'll protect them overnight. Anyway, Andy Chow, State House correspondent for Ohio Public Radio, thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we'll be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a while, but we have a new poll of Ohio voters. It is early. It is very early still, but these polls give us a clue on the attitudes of Ohio voters as we prepare to really get going in the 2020 campaign. This poll, done by Quinnipiac University, which is a reputable polling organization, shows that if the election were held today, Joe Biden would be the only Democrat who could easily beat President Trump in Ohio and secure the state's 18 electoral votes. The poll shows that Biden would beat Trump by 8 points. Biden has 50% support to Donald Trump's 42%. It's not all bad news for Biden's top-tier rivals. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Cory Booker all basically tie President Trump. So for them, it would be a toss-up. So they're not out of the running by any means. Tim Ryan, the only Ohioan in the Democratic field, well, he barely registers in this poll. He's at 1%, which is basically where he stands nationally. As to how Ohioans feel about President Trump, now remember, Donald Trump won Ohio by 8 percentage points in 2016 over Hillary Clinton. 3.5 years later, his approval rating stands at 43%. 52% of Ohioans do not like the job Donald Trump is doing. So he is quite a bit behind where he was on Election Day in 2016. So what does this all mean? Of course, Joe Biden seems to be benefiting first from name recognition and probably his blue-collar appeal. So that's why he is out in front here in Ohio. And it will help him in his case that he is the guy who can beat Donald Trump in these Midwestern Rust Belt states and carry him to the White House. Donald Trump seems to have some work to do. He won Ohio with 52% of the vote. He is between 6 and 10 points behind where he was when he beat Hillary Clinton. But remember, he's really not started campaigning yet. There is a long way to go. And this is a key stat. Nearly 6 in 10 Ohioans say they are better off financially than they were in 2016. That is generally very good news for the incumbent. But of course, Donald Trump is not your average incumbent. All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week, our shrewdest political move of the past 7 days. This, too, involves the energy bill. The House needed every vote, and some lawmakers were out of town. They were at a government conference in Chicago. So to get at least one lawmaker back to Columbus, staff members of the Ohio House and the governor's office ordered a state plane to fly to Chicago to retrieve the lawmakers, bring them back here so they could vote on the energy bill. The flight was deemed necessary because it was deemed state business. Well, first, the Dayton Daily News got wind of the flight plans. They started asking questions about it. And lo and behold, the flight was canceled. The lawmakers found other ways to get back to the State House. So technically, it was attempted snollygostering. But even attempting to use a state plane to get lawmakers to vote on a controversial bill that easily qualifies as our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for Snollygoster of the Week, or frankly, any suggestions or criticism, please email us at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, if you like what you heard, give us a good review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. That's it for this week. Steve Brown returns next week. I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.